Welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. This is the Leadership Quarter. This is a podcast for revenue, sales, and go-to-market leaders and practitioners that is focused on bringing you insights from the best and brightest the world has to offer. The Leadership Quarter is focused on asking the critical questions. How do we develop and empower sales leaders to build strong cultures and teams to hit our growth goals? Experts from around the world give their experiences and opinions on this critical aspect of sales. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow on your favorite podcast platform. And let's dive in to introducing today's guests. From starting as an electrical engineer to founding and leading one of the top international sales transformation firms in the world, Paul O'Donohue has had a full journey. An entrepreneur at heart, early on, Paul decided thinking big was better than thinking small. And he lived into his vision of creating an international firm dedicated to sales and people growth with roots in New Zealand. Join us today as he shares his lessons from that journey, how he built a strong sales and service-oriented culture, and how his team serves growth-minded leaders looking to transform their mindsets and impact their revenue to growth. Let's get started with Paul O'Donohue. Paul O'Donohue, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good to be here, Mr. Fuller. It's about time, right?
It is about time. We've been talking about this for forever. And I'm excited to have you. We just spent some significant time together. I was really, really excited to see you at the SalesStar Worldwide Conference, and that was awesome. And your team is just growing leaps and bounds, man.
Oh, it was just good to have you there. You know, it's we value our partnerships, and that is from our suppliers and also from our franchise partners all around the world. It's one thing we don't just provide verbal sort of credit to, but we really value our partnerships. And to have you really integrate into our conference and be there and support us and learn more about us, it's just wonderful. And, you know, the relationship with Membrane extends for over a decade. It's just got stronger and stronger and stronger. And do you know what I really love about this partnership? You're an extended family, you know, it's, and I say that because every single person in Membrane shares the same values as us. Like, it doesn't matter who in Membrane we get to hang out with or helps us, but we're all cut from the same cloth, and it just feels like an extended family. So for me, that's a really good litmus test in terms of whether you have the right partners.
Well, I can tell you my team is, when they're listening to this, they are all extremely appreciative of that. And I agree with you completely. Like, business is fun when you're working with people that you love and you're getting along with, you're operating on the truth, you know, and you're just trying your best to move forward together. Business gets really, really fun. So we feel the same thing about you. And let's dive in there a little bit into SalesStar and what it is and your journey there, because this is a fascinating, you have a fascinating journey, and I think people want to hear about it.
Well, I don't know really where to start, but it's kind of like I'm an accidental sales star. I started out as a Sparky and ended up being a sales star. So there's a little bit in between, right? But yeah. The first 10 years of my life, I was an industrial electrician. Did my time at Ford Motor Company in New Zealand, and you know, I became an industrial electrician with a diploma of electrical engineering. And then, you know, I always had this entrepreneurial desire to have my own business. But when I looked around the industry, I felt that electricians as a whole were really poor business people at that time. This was in the 90s. Not very good at selling themselves. They were, in fact, what I saw evidence of was undercutting each other, undermining each other. And some at that stage, you know, it was recessionary times, they were going broke. I went, hold on, there must be a better way. There's got to be a better way than this. You know, and if you're going to be a business owner, what I sort of felt was I needed to learn some business skills. So I decided to do another apprenticeship of sorts, which was in sales. And it took me a little while to find a sales gig. And it was an interesting process because most people wouldn't give me a chance at sales because I didn't have any experience. But I did, however, get a break as a sales engineer, which made a lot of sense. And that was selling variable speed motor control drivers. And it was a pretty cool job because I got to go to a lot of industrial sites, have a look at the process in terms of manufacturing. And really, my job was to optimize process and output and really just look at different ways on how we could do that with motor speed controllers. It got to a point where I felt I had learnt enough in sales and I went to start my own business back on the tools. And that was short-lived, Paul, because I found myself in a manufacturing environment. I think it was about 3:30 in the morning, and the morning shift was about to kickstart at 6:30, and then the machine's broken, and I'm covered in grease. There's no one around. It's just me. And, you know, you probably can tell from this, I'm a people person, so it's wasn't really my idea of fun. And it dawned on me that for 10 years I'd been doing something that I wasn't passionate about. You know, mm-hmm. I always wanted to get into sales, and I think it was my mum, so she goes, "Oh, get a real job. Like, sales will never amount to anything. Like, get a trade. It's be safe." I know this is crazy, right? So I kind of did the electrical thing just to sort of please mum and dad. And at that time, my neighbors were electricians as well, and they looked like they're doing all right for themselves. And, you know, I didn't even know what an electrician was, but I just decided to do that. But anyway, I followed the corporate route. I ended up working with one of the top 50 companies in the world, Tyco Electronics.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So Tyco is an acronym. It was called Take Your Company Over. But
I actually had one of my first deals as a salesperson was with Tyco Electronics. I sold them security software long time ago.
Yeah, so out of the manufacturing plant, selling from manufacturer to manufacturer. And that was an interesting time because it also allowed me to go back to university and study business, which I'm very grateful for. But the more I studied business, the more I kind of felt there was an itch I couldn't scratch in my entrepreneurial journey. And the more I felt trapped in the corporate life. And what I didn't like about corporate life is a lot of my, my ability to think in terms of strategy was taken away from me. So the company had moved the post quite a number of times. And I just felt if I didn't do something, that I was going to be stuck in corporate life and I would never actually go out and scratch this itch called being an entrepreneur. So I remember starting, I actually bought into a business consultancy. It was a general business consultancy coaching, and I was still doing a couple of papers at university. What I realized, it was a franchise system, and I realized that some franchise systems don't work and they're not that more of a harvesting process where they're selling franchises. That's the business model. Mm-hmm. I swore I'd never be one of those. What I also realized is I really suck at general business coaching. You know, it's like I'm the front end guy. Like, it was like always around sales. I'd also spent some time in recruitment. So I had this fascination on recruitment and assessing people. And I did this franchising paper at university, and the lecturer stood up at the class and he looked down with his beady eyes, you know, and his glasses on his end of his nose. And he says, "Here's the problem with most business owners." And I thought, "Oh, this is going to be really good." And he goes, "We think too small." And he goes, "Name a franchise in New Zealand." And everyone named the usual suspects. And he says, "Where did they originate from?" And everyone was like, "Well, the USA, USA, Canada, UK." And he goes, "Name one that went from New Zealand and went global." And everyone's like, "Who's got the answers there? I can't think of anyone." And then he said this, and that's my point. And then he said this really powerful word, imagine taking a little brand from New Zealand and growing global because the world's a big place. And that was like the first class of the trimester, and it just captivated me. I went, "Wow, imagine such a powerful word." And I went, "That's exactly what I want to do." It had that F-twin moment. Like, it was like, flip, that's what I want to do. And so I spent that trimester, 90 sort of days thinking about a business model. Bear in mind, I was doing general business consulting and a franchise system that didn't really work. And what I started thinking of was thinking big, because in my philosophy, thinking big is the same amount of energy as thinking small. So why not think big? And how I came up with sales was quite an interesting process. In a very similar space of time within that trimester, I was at a birthday party, my friend's birthday party, and I was talking to some random dude, and we must have been in deep in conversation for maybe about an hour. And he stops me in my track and he goes, "Hey, Paul," he goes, "I know why you're here." And I said, "Yeah, it's Nick's birthday." And he goes, No, "I know why you're here." I went, "Well, who else's birthday is it?" And he goes, No, "I know why you're here on the planet." And I was like, "Wow.
All right.
These conversations. Okay, give it to me." He goes, "You're here to make a difference." And I was like, "Wow." I was actually really taken back by it because, I must have been about 32 at the time. And I was gifted my purpose because it just resonated with me. Everything I had done in my life was really to serve others and to make a difference. So, the business consulting, always trying to make a difference, helping grow people and companies. I spent some time in recruitment. It was always really diligent in helping candidates get the right job and the client get the right candidate, had no failures. Just everything I did was trying to make a difference in the world. And it spoke volumes to me. And I decided to think about this global brand and think about what is it that I could do that could make a difference. What is it that I was really passionate about? Because, it's that old adage, if you find something you're passionate about, you never work a day in your life. So I was determined to find something I was passionate about. I got to create and design the business from a blank piece of paper. What I wrote down on the piece of paper was sales, training, assessment, and recruitment. And those were all the things I felt I was passionate about and I could make a difference in. And when I looked at the acronym, it was STAR, because the other acronym was really bad rats, right? I knew a thing about marketing.
Sales rats would be rough. Yeah.
I imagine sales rats. You can't unthink that now, can you? You're going to see this forever.
But every time.
So that's kind of the meaning behind STAR. And to say that I was an accidental sales star is being brought up in New Zealand, there is a tall poppy syndrome. We're kind of very understated and very down to earth. And to say you're a sales star is, that didn't really fit comfortably with me for a long, long time. We're not very braggadocious at all, but it was more that the acronym and what I wanted to do just made this acronym sales star. So that was the essence behind the brand. And for the last 20 years, I've just taken it upon myself to really live, breathe, and just consume every bit of business knowledge, every sales knowledge, to help best serve me and help best serve my clients. And what we are really is it's a purpose-driven company. We make a difference, and how we do that is we grow people to grow sales. But we're very values-led, so we've got some core values that we live and die by as well. And I guess you've seen an outcome of that. And it's hard to describe. When you come to a conference, there's something magical in the air. And, people say to me, "Hey, this is like a family reunion." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? This is better than a family reunion." And they go, "Why is that?" And I went, "Well, you can't choose your family, Sometimes you have family members that you wouldn't normally hang out with in a social scene. But I'm really proud of the fact that there's no one in SalesStar that you need to walk around, because they're not good humans and you wouldn't want to have good conversations with them. So, you take those core elements of what we're building here and it makes for a remarkable culture. And that's what I've taken away from the US. We've got something remarkable. And I say that because we've got prospects, suppliers, people in the organization that remark about the culture and about the people. And so much so that what I've taken away is culture is a competitive advantage, our people and our culture. When people remark on it and it's a first impression for prospects coming in, it's night and day from where they've been. Like they've come out of corporate, you know, US corporate, America's corporate, and it's full of the complete opposite to what we're building. It's not purpose driven. There's no culture. There's distrust with leadership. They've been effed over, you know, in their quest to do good in the company, and it's not reciprocal. So it's very easy for us to be just authentic in who we are, to set ourselves apart in a really busy market. So that's something I'm proud of.
And you should be. You absolutely should be. And I'm going to just take a step back here. And one thing I'm going to tell everybody that is listening, you'll see a couple of clips of this on LinkedIn and that type of stuff. But Paul's background, it's so cool to hear that story and then look at your background right now and see a global company, you know, see the world, right? And yes, a global company. Yeah. And you notice that I got in my background too, this the same thing. I got the world back there because I don't, the thinking small is too small, right? That's a really cool vision that you had. And one of the things that I want to tie this episode into that we talked about directly speaks directly to what you're talking about, which is building sales cultures, that sales leadership cultures, like being able to have that purpose-driven, sales-based, value-driven culture. It's a differentiator across the, like when you walk into a company that has it, you know it. Right. And you're like, oh my gosh, you can smell it. I love being here. And when you walk into a company that just has it on the wall, right? It just has a little thing on the wall, maybe a line or two about what their culture is. And, you know, you see people looking the other way when they pass it, you can smell that too, right? You know when they don't live their values. So let's dive into this. What are some of the most important things that you see from your journey with SalesStar, as well as you're in companies every single day doing this? How do you go about helping them develop and build that sales-driven culture?
All right. So that's a great question in itself. And I'm just going to hold that question because I wanted to
sort it back. Holding it. Yes.
I was reflecting on this whole globe and your globe, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, it's 19 years in and I had this vision to grow a global company and now we're in the UK, Sweden, Mexico. How bizarre is this? We have all of our programs transcribed into Spanish and our Spanish partner has only partnered us for about 2 years and is one of our most successful partners. So you saw at the conference that they were podium finish on just about every category. So That's freaking amazing. That blows my mind. And then, you know, we started in New Zealand, but from New Zealand and ANZ, Australian New Zealand revenue, more than 60% of our revenue comes from Australia. So that's an interesting stat. But then our biggest growth is coming from the US right now, where we've got five partners there. And this kind of blows my mind because I want to tell a story before we get onto the culture piece. And it's really around mindset, right? Because we talked about thinking big, and most people are limited by their own thinking. And I was absolutely one of those. Although I was thinking big, I think it was my second year or first year at the Objective Management Conference in Boston. I got to have dinner with this gentleman, and he was a pretty sort of senior guy. Him and I were the last people left at the conference, and I had dinner with him. And he just asked me a few questions that really jolted me. And one of them was, who's the best in the world at what you do? And I was like, oh, there's probably this guy, this person. And he says, oh, why can't it be you? And I was like, oh, no, I'm just a little dude from New Zealand, just playing in a, you know, a big pond, just learning. And he leans in, he goes, the only reason you can't be the best in the world is in between your ears. He says, hey, consider this. Someone needs to be the best in the world at what they do. Why can't it be you? And I just went, wow. I just had to figure out what we could be the best in the world at. And So what we want to be the best in the world at is empowering our coaches to get transformational results for our clients. So we're a sales transformation company, not a training company. We transform organizations, you know, from underperforming sales teams to overachieving. And we do things very different, right? So, and I think that's kind of the freshness from not having me traditionally come from the industry. Often when you have someone come outside the industry, they look at things very differently. So I say to people, you know, I went from being industrial electricians where I was fixing industrial machines and testing machines and fault-finding machines to optimize the performance to working on sales machines. So, you know, one of the first things you do as an electrician is you plug things in, you test, you try and find out what the root cause of the problem is. And that's first and foremost what I was looking for from working on sales machines. It's like there must be some sort of assessment. There must be something that you can plug in and get to the root cause of why companies aren't growing. Because sales is complex, right? From especially if you're a CEO or a sales leader, you know, and there's a lot of pressure on you to grow sales. Like, where do you start? You can go through a process of elimination. You know, new CRM, new leaders, new salespeople, new messaging, whatever. Some of it doesn't work. And for me, it was there must be an easier way to get to the bedrock of the issues. Test the organization from leadership, management, people, strategy, process. And then you've got the data there to make some really intelligent decisions. And I think that's a good segue into answering your question, like, where does the culture start? It starts from the CEO, the owner. It's their intention. You know, are they growth-minded? You know, do they want to grow? Do they care in the people? You know, are they just paying lip service to it? Because if your intention is right, where you believe in growth and you're growth-minded, you'll put interventions in place to make that happen. I think a fish rots from the head, right? So bad culture, stinky thinking from the leader.
Let me interrupt you for a second. What you say growth-minded, define that from Paul's point of view, because I think that's a really key term in how we're talking about this. Like, what is that growth-minded leader? What do you see?
Well, growth-minded, I talk about growth in holistic ways where you're open to developing you, your mindset. You know, mind is like a parachute. They work best when they're open. So it's being open to looking at new ideas. It's having a burning desire to want to grow your people, want to grow yourself, being a lifelong student, right? Always looking for, I've got this new core value that I want to roll out in the company. It's called Better Never Stops. And I think that's really the essence of what I'm talking about here is growth-minded people don't rest on their laurels. They're always looking to, you know, how to develop themselves and their people. Growth-mindedness is this desire to wanting to grow the company for good. So, yeah, for me, that's fixed-minded. That's the kind of the reverse is that they're not open to change. They're not open to new ideas. You know, they'll say this, we've always done it this way, which is really the most expensive words you could ever hear in a business. Oh, that's the way we've always done it, son.
Yeah,
it's like, well, okay, that might have got you here, but what got you here might not get you there. So, and that takes an openness from a leader to have that growth mindset. Maybe there's a better way, you know, a curious mindset.
Yeah, I have a quick story on this one. One of my best friends in life shook me on that really early on in my career. And I came into sales. I had just gotten off a master's degree in communication. And I was like, I came in thinking, oh, it's this sales thing. I know how to communicate. This is going to be easy. Holy crap, was I wrong? I came into it with this mindset that I had learned just about everything there was to know. even before coming into it, right? I have a master's degree. I'm all that. And
yeah,
I got shook out of that by my buddy who at that time hadn't finished college, was the top salesperson in the organization, was freaking amazing. And the reason Nate is able to do it, and he's just done amazing things with his life, is he adopted that so early, which that growth mindset, always learning, always improving, always being better. And it was one of the best lessons I ever had in my life, which was, no, you haven't earned the right to know anything on any given day. You got to learn, right? You got to come in and, you know, you do have to take what you know and implement it. But what got you here, exactly what you said, what got you there is not going to get you to the next step. So taking that growth-minded leader, and you talked about assessment, how do you assess for a growth-minded leader, and then how do you help them drive a culture?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the culture piece, but I think the growth-mindedness is, in particular, it's hard to evaluate for. It's more understanding if there's a willingness to change, a willingness to grow, an openness to do that. But let's talk a little bit more on the culture piece. The things that serve me really well and what I've done, we've just touched on it. And you'll see that everyone at SalesStars cut from the same cloth, and that's kind of what the magic is. And it's by design, not by default. So how is that? We have a set, like we have a purpose. It's to make a difference, right? To grow people, to grow sales. And one of the first things we're looking for in an interview process is, why are they interested in working for us? What have they done in the past? Like what's important to them? Why? And we'll find out generally what happens is they want to make a difference. Right. Mm-hmm. So there we go. Right. There's alignment there on the purpose. then we have, at the moment, we only have four values. Soon to be announced, you heard this here first, is this better never stops, right? And that's, and I'll start with the better never stops because this is new. I think I announced it at the conference, which is the theme for next year's conference. I'm already thinking 12 months out, thinking better never stops. It's kind of like that it's the Kaizen philosophy, which is a Japanese word for continuous improvement. And I think that's kind of an overused statement. One of our, in New Zealand, we're a pretty small population and, you know, we excel in rugby and our rugby team is called the All Blacks, and the All Blacks have had the best record of any team sport in history. At one stage, they were the best team in terms of developing a winning culture. And what they had this core value of better never stops. And that's something that I... how would I say it? It just rings true to me because I'm always looking to continuously improve what we do to give a better outcome for our clients. And the interesting thing here, Paul, is as I was playing golf in Abu Dhabi last week, there was this building and it had this billboard and it said, better never stops. And I was like, wow, that's a sign if there was ever one, right? That this has got to be a core value. So I've gone off topic here a little bit, but the other core values are create raving fans. So when I started in business, we didn't have any marketing. We had really no idea what we're doing. I started off with five clients just to over-service them, under-promise, over-service them, turn them into raving fans, because referral marketing is the best form of marketing. So every one of those clients gave me three referrals, and then I ended up with 15 clients at the end of the year. So, you know, under promise, over deliver is essentially what one of our core values is. Doing things for the right reasons is another core value. And, you know, sales, you can manipulate sales, especially using our framework, which is consultative selling. That's the STAR process itself. You can make a sale not for the right reasons. And what I always say to my team is, you've got to be client-centric, right? It's got to be the best thing for your prospect, the best thing for the client, not the best thing for you. So if you care more about your clients than yourself, you'll grow in quantity and quality. And that comes across in your communication and what you do. So do things for the right reasons. The third core value is team first. So we've had some A players that I've had to eradicate out of the business because they were lone wolves. When I wasn't at the office back in the day when we had offices and people were in offices, they would run amok and, you know, people would hate working with them. So, you know, even I can think of two A players, well, they're not A players, they were high producers that didn't fit our core values that are no longer in the business. And it's interesting because the team have pushed them out, which makes my job easier. And the fourth core value is just being a product of the product. We need to, you know, walk the talk, live and breathe what we do. Yep. A lot of CEOs buy from us because of the way we sold. So, you know, we do have to be a product of the product. So that's kind of the culture piece that rings true of all organizations. But then I look at high-performance sales organizations, and that's what we do. We're change agents. So it starts with the intention that the CEO wants to grow their business. Often, sometimes, they're held hostage by the sales leaders themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Sales leaders, sales managers are often there because they're the best performing salesperson. They don't always make the best coach. They don't always know the best way to develop high-performing cultures. So our first step is to evaluate the organization. It's to meet the organization where they are. So in order to do that, we need a datum point. We need to objectively evaluate the organization. We evaluate the leaders, the managers, and the salespeople. We evaluate strategy and process, and that paints a picture in terms of where they are now. On the backdrop of that, it's where they want to be in 3 years. So the thing that makes us very different is we're not only are we a sales transformation company, but we are strategic partners. Much like most of our clients would have a CFO and they partner an accounting firm or a marketing manager that partners a marketing agency, we're strategic sales partners to the CEO and the sales leaders who want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do there.
Well, that's that's a huge gap to fill. Like, and I say this as a sales leader, right? But it's a huge gap to fill because most times CEOs hire the sales leader. The sales leader is supposed to go out and create all the training, create everything, you know, make sure they do it all themselves. And, you know, they paying the sales leader a commission and a bunch of money. Why would they not? But that's a limiting belief that most CEOs have, I would think.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I've got a marketing manager. Why do I need a marketing agency? I've got a CFO. Mm-hmm. Why do I need an accounting firm? Because they can't do everything.
Yep.
Right. You know, we've got breadth of products and depth of products for every age and stage of a company and for every person in the company, whether they're a CEO, a sales leader, a sales manager, or in frontline sales. So we're there to support the sales leaders. We're there to make them look like heroes and their jobs easier. But so if we go back to high-performing cultures, it starts with learning what the truth is, like removing the guesswork. And the truth is what the data says. And we partnered the Objective Management Group 19 years ago because they're the best in class at evaluating sales organizations. And they're the best in class at sales effectiveness assessments. So that is our first point of call is to evaluate. And the second piece where we start is I've got a favorite saying, which is those who build the plan don't fight the plan. So you'll see that most salespeople, you know, they get disgruntled because they say, hey, my KPIs are this, or this is what I need to do. And it was bestowed on them by their leaders. And they don't kind of feel like they own those numbers. We take people through a process, and it's the first step is a lot of companies don't have a really focused growth plan. So we get the whole team to build a strategic growth plan. So everyone feels like they own it. You know, everyone knows what the game plan is because they're all on the same page. They know who They should be targeting who they have conversations with, what those conversations sound like, how they differentiate themselves. What does success look like to them? What does success look like in the organization? And then we backwards engineer. So that's my engineering background coming in. As we look at success and we go, well, you know, what does the leading indicators need to be for us to reach those goals, for the sales team to reach those goals and that achievement? And so, you know, we backwards engineer the proposals they need to have out there that they present, discovery meetings, phone calls, and everyone walks away feeling like they own those KPIs. So it's easier from a leadership point of view. So there's a big point of view. It's like instead of the leader telling them that that's what it should be, it's no, that your sales team have just, you know, voluntarily suggested that those are those KPIs that are going to help them get to their goals. It also goes with a philosophy I have. It's like you can get anything in life that you want as long as you help enough people get what they want. So as sales leaders need to know what's important to their sales team, what are their goals, you know, how they're going to get to those goals is a blueprint.
So that's helping lift them. I mean, that's helping lift them up. It's a completely different approach than most people take. I get just being open about it. Most people take, hey, here's the amount of the money that we need. Yeah. Here's the amount of money that we need. Here's your budget. Go out and make it happen. Right. And you're saying you get a growth-minded CEO that then is willing to open up the truth about their business, willing to truly understand it and assess it, and then drive that down, tell that truth to the salespeople and the sales teams. And upon that truth, you start to develop a plan together. So from the bottom up and top down, you're driving into the same KPIs.
Yeah, from the top up, it's called rainbows. And from the bottom down, it's reality, right? So Troy Hazard, who you've met, who's our chairman, he goes, how do you connect the rainbows with reality? And so that's the way you do it, is bottom up goals and top down. So somewhere in the middle is the truth. So, you know, and that strategy is important because it helps the companies really focus with a lot of attention on where their growth is going to come from, whether it's new business or existing business. If it's new business, you know, what does that look like? And do they have the capability to do that? The second piece to that is the go-to-market process. It's a milestone-centric sales process. And you know, unlike most training companies, we don't come along and say, here's a vanilla sales process. There, you follow it. We build it with the team. So again, those who plan the fight don't fight the plan. So if we plan the process and we develop it, there's a sense of ownership here. It's like, well, we developed that together. That's our process, right? That's not someone coming and telling us. I mean, sure, we guide them because at the end of the day, we've built hundreds and hundreds of processes across every major industry, and we know what works. But there's always nuances in every company because every company is supposedly different. And so we customize the process. And if you want to develop high developing teams, you need a repeatable, predictable process that's scalable that people can follow. And what I've learned is that 95% of companies don't have a strategic selling system at all. And it's one of the things that sets us apart is you've got to have that strategic selling system. So that's your plan and your process. And so with a process, you get that repetition, you end up defining the rules of the game in every phase of the process. So that helps a leader hold the team accountable, coach them for performance, improve the effectiveness through the stages. And it helps them coach on deal-specific opportunities that come up, because you can take the framework and you can overlay it to say, hey, where are you in the process with this particular deal? Have we qualified it well? Do we know what their buying decisions are? Do we know their timeline? Do we know other people in the decision-making? You know, so it's really defining the rules of the game. And when you define it really well, that means you can forecast more accurately as well. It's just a byproduct of what happens. But then you need to be able to take that process and put it into something dynamic. And that's where Membrane comes in. There's a plug for you, Paul. And that's why we love this relationship with Membrane, because, you know, we have a process that is embedded into a pipeline and people can follow it. You can coach to it. I believe in data decision coaching, data decision making. So you need that data and those insights to be able to make good decisions. So performance culture comes with holding people accountable to the numbers. Performance culture comes with having a coaching culture, which a lot of companies don't do. They don't do enough coaching. They don't do it on a regular basis. And they don't do it right.
So one of the things, yeah, and you said something interesting that I want to jump back to real quick. I'm going to dive into this really quick because I have a question for you. How important is it? Because you start with a CEO. That's where you said the head of the beast is at the CEO. The CEO drives culture, right? That growth mindedness. Yep. How important is it that CEO know exactly how they sell, how they get revenue, so he can hold his sales managers and sales leaders accountable to not just the company core values, but if it was my company, the Paul Company way, right? How important is it that he has him or her have that view of the entire process so they can drive a growth-minded organization together, like up? Because I see many CEOs don't know that about the organization. And that's not throwing shade at any CEOs out there. It's just the truth. They don't know really how their sales team is going about what they're doing, the ethos it's built on, and all that stuff.
Well, I think every growth CEO needs to be involved in the strategy and development of the process. You know, it's the pointy end of any business. Mm-hmm. Like, and here's where I see a lot of misalignment. You know, companies, especially in our space, when I realized that electricians couldn't sell, I realized that most tradespeople couldn't sell, I realized engineers couldn't sell, I realized that most professional salespeople couldn't sell, and I realized that most technicians couldn't sell. It's like the whole sort of blue-collared worker, the professional services, anyone that sells a technical product or service sells poorly. Why? Because we put so much attention on our professional service and our knowledge on what we're an expert in. We discount the thing that's most important when it comes to business development, and that's sales. How to say it? It's not dissimilar to a growth-minded CEO that's come through the ranks. They need to know about business development and sales. Like a red flag for us is when a CEO is not part of the strategy and we develop a growth strategy or part of the planning and process, it can't be led from top down. And that's where it all fails and unhinges. Change agents at the end of the day. But if there are some clients that haven't got the results, it's generally because it hasn't been led from the top down.
And we've been all over the place. I really thank you for diving in here. I mean, I'm just going to recap in about 30 seconds everything that we talked about. So let's see if I, number one, your story. Thank you for sharing that. That was amazing. Number two, making sure how important that growth mindedness is and being able to assess that in yourself. And I got to thank you, by the way, for a lot of lessons in there. I've just taken a lot of lessons from you in that. Being able to be growth minded and transformative. Why think small when you can think big? And to be able to have a big thinking visionary CEO that also can dive down into understanding the truth and the true nature of their organization. Like, where are we now and where are the gaps to help us move forward? And you mentioned everything from, we got to get that truth, we got to assess, we got to get the right people on the bus, we got to set up the right processes and systems to make sure it happens, we got to get them trained, we got to get them coached. And I know you have a process for that, and it's an amazing process. Let's dive into one last topic before we get off. I'm really interested in what you're seeing out there in market overall in terms of sales leadership. If you're going to rate it from a 1 to a 10 across the company, across all the companies that you're transferring, do we need to make a leap forward as an industry in the next 10 years to really keep pushing business, or is the status quo always going to be the status quo? Like, what do you think on that?
It might be a bit of an ambiguous question, but
it probably is. It's probably a shitty question.
What am I seeing? If I could sum it up, you can't sell a secret. You've got to make, if you're growth minded, nothing happens until someone makes a sale. So everyone in the organization needs to step up and they need to make sales the most important thing in their business. You know, it's like the accountant that spent 6 years to get their accounting certifications and degree. But if they don't develop their business development and they can't win new business, it really accounts for nothing. So, you know, I think it's time to take a good look at ourselves and say, you know, are we playing a big enough game? Are we taking sales seriously? Because what I see is that a lot of companies are too casual in their approach. And if you're too casual, you become a casualty.
On that, we will, that's a great, great two words of wisdom there. What was the first one? The second one was just, if you're too casual, you'll become a casualty. What was the first one that you just dropped on us?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I'm going to rewind this and we're going to replay it about six times. Can't sell a secret. That's fantastic. That's great words of wisdom.
And so here's what it is. And this might sum it up. The industry that we serve, which is, you know, technical salespeople as a whole, we live in a world where we believe sales is a bad word and it's got negative connotations. It's the stereotypical used car salesperson, but it all starts with reframing our mindset around what sales is and what it isn't. Sales isn't something that you do to people. It's something you help people with. So for me, my definition of sales is it's helping customers be more profitable. So we're in the game of serving our clients, helping them be more effective, more productive, more profitable in ways they've never thought of. So we're just in the business of helping companies, right? So if we can come up with a different framing around sales, and the interesting thing is sales is just a process that can be learned. The right methodology means that you can just ask the right questions in a consultative way. You don't need any cheesy closing lines or high pressure to be a really good salesperson. There are better ways. There's methodologies that help technical salespeople be better versions of themselves. But it starts with mindset. So everyone needs to lean into it and change their paradigm with what sales is and what it isn't.
Well, that's great. Well, let's wrap it up on that. Speaking of mindset, everybody out there, Paul O'Donohue, follow him on LinkedIn. Make sure that you're following SalesStar for content. He's got some great stuff out there on mindset, on thinking big rather than thinking small, on how to drive leadership throughout the sales culture. And SalesStar, I am proud to be a partner. I'm proud to be getting this out there with everybody. And with that, I will sign off for today. We'll sign off from the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Any final words, Paul?
No, look, it's just been a privilege being on your podcast and having you guys as a partner. In all seriousness, it's, you know, I say the evaluation is it's the truth. But we also say within SalesStar that membrane is the one source of truth because it gives us an honest assessment of what's going on in the organization. And do you know what? Data doesn't lie. Only people do.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody. Keep shining bright out there. And until the next episode, we'll see you later. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Please take a moment, like, subscribe, share this podcast on all your favorite platforms, and let's get the word out. This podcast is proud to be brought to you by Membrane.com. We are the world's top B2B sales platform. And in the world of B2B sales, with everything from prospecting to business acquisition to managing complex growth, Membrane has the right size technology for your sales team. Our latest innovation, the Coaching Cockpit, empowers your leaders, managers, and team with the information and tools they need to take their skills to the next level and to take advantage of the exponential power of effective sales coaching. With our technology and the top team of sales partners around the world, Membrane is helping to achieve our driving vision.
This is, quite simply, elevating the sales profession. To learn more, find us at www.membrane.com. That is M-E-M-B-R-A-I-N.com. Or contact us via email at sales@membrane.com. Keep shining bright and have a wonderful day.